This is CliffCentral.com. Yeah, baby. Yeah. Yet again, another one of those absolutely fantastic days. My goodness. It's always a fantastic time, though, when I'm around. You know what I mean? In my life, it's always good news season. Always good news season. We're always doing something. I'm always up to something, either with friends or on my own. But man, oh man, you just got to have that upbeat feeling about yourself. And actually, the really good news is that that type of stuff does not have to come from outside, okay? We actually make those good things happen in us. You know, there's an example I have of motivation. You know what? Let's say, for instance, I'm doing a kickstart, right? As people, sometimes as motivators, we have to push you in order for you to, you know, to start gaining momentum and going where you want to go. But here's the differentiator. You see, even when it comes to kickstarting your car or your engine, we can only push you a couple of times, but then you need to kick in and you need to go brrr, man, you need to start going. You know what I mean? The internal engine has got to work at some point. And the real reason why you can go from where you are to where you want to be has to be an internal force, an internal drive. That's your engine. You know, as motivators or anybody who's got that positive influence in your life, they can only kickstart you for a couple of meters, okay? But then you need to start kicking in and believing in yourself with that internal motivation, that internal engine. And that's how you get to go to the next level. And that's just my two cents for the day, you know what I mean? And that's actually how we get going. And from time to time, you might have to tap back into your kickstart. You know, I had to, for instance, when I was feeling like, man, the energy's not quite there, I had to go back to the basics. What gets me going? And I had to look at some YouTube videos because I know that, you know, and when I get to listen to people like Eric Thomas, when I get to listen to people like Les Brown, people like Brian Tracy, Will Smith, I realize Will Smith actually motivates me. Wow, he actually is such an inspirational person. And I said, you know what, let me feed myself this type of stuff. And instead of playing music in the house, I play motivational stuff while I'm doing whatever I'm doing. Secretly, whether I'm thinking about it or not, that good energy is actually getting into my mind, and I can wake up the next day feeling like I'm on top of the world. You gotta have the salt. That's what I said last year, and I still mean it. When I was 3 years old, my mom said, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, guys, I'm telling you, come out here, have some salt about you. You know what? Salt has that flavor. You need to have the flavor in the life, man. Come on. All right. That's about it. I'm done speaking. Welcome to it. It's Unplugged and In Charge. It is on cliffcentral.com. We have this, what I call the shortest hour of the week. And we always have these great conversations with people who build us up in one way or the other. When we listen to their stories, we get to, you know, take out some of the gems that have made them the amazing people they are. These are then things that we can use in our lives to also get ahead and be where we want to be as well. So we always talk to people who are doing amazing things. And this time around, I've got a lady right here with me. Man, she's a powerhouse. I mean, she's done it all. She's entered beauty pageants. I looked at her and I was like, hey, we got a supermodel today. You know what I mean? She's done that, but not only that. Then she decided, you know what? I'm not just a pretty face, but I'm a pretty mean businesswoman as well. And she's dominated in that space. I think she's got about 5 different companies, and I'm hoping that it's even more by now. Who knows? But she's really doing well. I met her outside in the parking lot and she was already doing business. I mean, this lady is on the ball. And amongst all of this, she's also a mother and a wife, and she's, you know, she's juggling the whole nine yards, man. It's great to see that you don't only have to be one-dimensional. You can literally have it all. You can have the looks, the motherly touch, then that businesswoman corporate vibe about you. You can literally do it all in one. And she's now here with us. Her name is Candice Robertson. How do you do, Candice?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you and to just get to learn from you as well. I'm hoping that's what we're gonna get to unearth from you, a lot of your amazing diamonds. And of course, diamonds took a long time to form. So you're going to tell us how they started as coal and how it all became diamond. Are you excited?
I'm very excited, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you for making the time to come out as well and just to share. So let's get down to it. Let's start the journey of Candace. Where did it all start, Candace?
Business-wise, or?
You can start wherever you want to start.
Okay, so I'm an entrepreneur by heart. I mean, like, I had my first spaza shop when I was 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Outside my dad's house, and that's how I used to make pocket money. So it's been in me for all my life.
Yeah.
And then in 2010, my brother and I decided to open a health company, and we were doing diets for people and making them skinny. And then somebody said to me, well, you're a chef and you've done nutrition, why don't you just cook for us? So I was doing breakfast, lunch, and supper and snacks according to your calories and making people look super hot.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Now that before we even rush past that point, we have to just zoom into that moment where you said you had your little spaza shop right there at home. And I believe, I always say to people, start with a backyard garden. You know, before you want to be independent of the grocery stores, start with a little backyard garden. Learn about the process. Grow slowly. And you telling me that you started with a spaza shop. What did you sell in your spaza shop? And how old were you at this stage?
So I was 5 years old. I had a box that my grandfather gave me. And each compartment had little sweets in those Nutty Puffs. I don't know if they're still on the market.
Nutty Puffs.
Those little chocolate eclairs. They had peanuts. They had different sweets and chips and lollipops and bubble gum. And I mean, like, I'm not going to give you my, well, I'll give you my age, but I mean, like, 36 years ago, it was non-existent.
Wow. Yeah. So that's where you started, and that's where you were, I'm assuming that's where you were learning a lot of the entrepreneurial skills as well. I mean, I remember, I think I started out selling, this is a little embarrassing to say, but I started out selling cigarettes and oranges at the next to the soccer stadiums. Well, it was actually like a soccer ground. Don't think of it as a stadium. Think of it as a ground. And when they say e groundini, they actually meant it's literally a patch of, you know, township soccer fields don't have the grass. The grass is outside the field. The fans sit in the grass and you guys play on literally the dusty turf, you know. And that's where I was selling my cigarettes from for 50 cents. Well, cigarettes were 50 cents. Yes. Now you can imagine how long that was. I was not of the legal age to even have cigarettes, consume them or anything. Here I was selling them, you know. And I can kind of relate with your spaza shop story. And sometimes people overlook just how much we can learn, even though we are young kids at that time, about entrepreneurship. Are there any lessons that you learned at that tender age about entrepreneurship?
You know, I also worked in my dad's shop. My dad had a butchery. So we grew up in that shop since we were born. So on holidays, we were there. I used to play on the calculator and I used to learn how to pick up calls and speak to customers. And it's amazing whatever I learned in that period or time period, I've now pulled through to my children who's 5 and 6. So every afternoon they come to my bakery. And then they come and make rolls, and all they want to do is do work. What can they help the guys with to do work? So it definitely plants a seed. Definitely.
Wow. Amazing. And it's great that you're saying that your father was also into business as well. I mean, he had a butchery. Sometimes I find that people who had entrepreneurial parents find it easier to get into entrepreneurship, whereas if you never had anyone to set that type of example for you, you might be a little more anxious about it because you're still worried about all these unknowns, like, will people come? What if I don't get customers? You know, did you find that it was easier for you to get in, or was it still just as hard as anybody else?
I think it's just as hard as anyone else because it's not a game that my dad knew. I mean, like, he would just, and he gave me all the support. He would take me every Monday to go and buy sweets, but he would say to me, don't buy those because you're not going to make as much money. So definitely, you know, your MBA as a small kid in entrepreneurship definitely will come from your father or mother if they have their own business.
All right. So then we moved on to a time where you got a little bit older, no longer 5 years old, teenagers, you spent them in the butchery learning some more stuff. And then, all right, high school's finished. What's next?
Well, I finished my last Afrikaans exam on I think it was 26 November.
Wow, you even remember the date.
Yes, and I didn't have my results and I jumped on a plane. I went to the UK and I worked, saved some money, and then I ended up in the south of France. And I was employed as a chef. I couldn't cook in those days. Yeah. So my mom used to write me recipes in letter format in Afrikaans and fax me them on those old roller faxes so that nobody could understand. And I started cooking on the boat. And I had people like Andrew Lloyd Webber and quite a lot of famous people on the boat.
That's pretty big. That's not a joke. Jeez. Okay, Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mean, you were already... You were already getting into this thing. You at this time, you don't have your results yet. You don't even know how life's going to look like when you get back home. But you just decided, okay, this is what I want to do. Was it your decision? Was it a family decision? How did you end up in that route?
Well, I traveled, and you know, there's a lot of people that travel in the UK. And I said to people, well, what's the next stop? Where do you go after the UK? You either go on a Contiki or... you end up in the south of France, or you go skiing. So somebody said to me, go and try and work on a yacht. See if you can get work as a deckhand or one of those. And they just said to me, go to Nice. And from there, I just walked the docks until somebody decided to employ me.
Wow. This is different from the everyday tried and tested route. You know, everyone wants to go for the safe stuff. Go for the... you know, the predictable, you know, I'm just going to go to college or go to varsity, get this qualification. Then from here, go and get a stable job. And if I can't get to school yet, I'm going to, you know, but normally everyone goes for these tried and tested safe routes. And you instead decided, you know what, we're going to get on a boat. We're not going to set up the sails. We'll see where the wind takes us. And you just went. That daredevil approach means that somewhere inside you thought that it's all going to work out. Everything is part of the master plan and somehow it will work out. I just have to have faith that this is the route. Shucks, I just want to understand, how do we muster up that courage? Because a lot of people are so scared of the unknown. They rather want everything to be so predictable. And yet here you were, you're very young. And you just had this belief that everything was going to work out. Where do you get it? Because we want it too.
You know what? I think it's maybe a little bit of stupidity. Because because if I think about it now, and I have to send one of my kids overseas, not knowing where they are for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, life has changed.
True.
So I think it was just... like I said, a bit of ignorance.
So if you said you have one child that's 5-6 years old at the moment. So if that child, let's say, is now 17, what's the child's name, by the way?
Max.
Max. When Max turns 19 and Max just finished with high school, and you're like, Max, you're going to be an engineer, right? And he says, no, mom, I actually just want to go to like L.A., and just like see how Hollywood looks like. You want to study there? Do you want to go to the New York Film Academy? No, mom. I don't want to be committed to anything. I just want you to give me a plane ticket to get there. I'll figure it out. Like, just give me a moment to just figure it out. I just want to meet people, see what it looks like, and figure it out. Like, all right, do you want us to come with you? No, mom, no. I just want to go. I'm just going to figure it out. What would you be saying to Max?
You know what? I would back him 100%.
Wow.
I think it was a phenomenal experience for me. If I could have it over, I would have first finished my studies.
Yeah.
And then gone, because it gives you so much more of an opportunity to
when
do different
stuff. When you have something
to offer. Yes, 100%. Because what can you do at the age of 18? You can bar lady, you can work in a restaurant, you can work in a clothing store, you can do that type of thing.
You know, interesting you mentioned that. I remember when I was in grade 9 and I got so frustrated when they announced that now in grade 10 we're going to have to pick what we want to study. And I felt like it was too early to limit me. Like, why are you limiting me to three options? You know, they're saying, no, pick three modules. So there's, science type of modules and business type of modules and accountancy and those type of things, or IT. And man, shucks. Because before that, you know, you had your art and culture, you had history, you had a little bit of, in art and culture, there's a little bit of acting, a little bit of poetry, a little bit of music. And in history class, there's a, you know, there's all of these things that, you know, historic things. And there's also politics that you're learning there, and all these economics and all of that. And then there's an accountancy class. And then there was a physics class and a science class and a biology. And we had so many options before. I even had robotics. We were even making robots and programming them and everything. And we had rekenaartuk, which was literally...
You
know, you just speak
so well.
That was Afrikaans school geweest. Anyway, so there's, you know, and we and those kids were typing. If you didn't want to type, you would build robots. I decided to build robots instead. But what I'm saying is that in grade 8 and 9, we had all these options. And I felt like it's great to know a little bit about everything until you can really decide. And I felt like it was too soon to have to limit us to say, well, pick your life decision now. You're like, I'm only 14. I was 14. And I'm thinking, how can I possibly make a lifelong decision at this age? Why can't I just have everything? It's okay. I don't mind writing 16 exams, but I'd rather have everything and learn with it and grow with it until I can make a more informed decision when I know more about each field. And I just felt like, you know, 14 was too young to have to channel yourself already. Because you know what happens? You have to pick three. And usually you want to pick three that are more or less in the same line. Because let's say if you want to study chemical engineering, like what I went and did, you know, they'll look at your mathematics mark, and they'll look at your science mark, and they might even look at your life science mark. And if you decided not to have life science and you had economics instead, and now it works against you in some way. And if you wanted to, when you're 18, do economics instead, they would say, well, you didn't really have any economics modules in high school or subjects, so how could you go in that line? Do you understand how big that decision actually is when you're about 15, 16 years old? Yeah, so that's my dilemma. Now, I think, you know, Max... When you're saying first get an education, yes, it's good. But on the other hand, what helped you is that you were not channeled yet. You were not compartmentalized. You were not put in a certain quadrant and they said, by the way, this is all you'll ever be. And now you can go on your little vacation. But even when you're there, look for things along only this quadrant. Because you were just free. You could do whatever you want to do. And now you got 5 businesses. Isn't that just cool?
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know what you have to say about my line of thinking. I mean, you could say, Wizards, total rubbish. Throw it out. Max is not following you.
No, you're
100% right. But I'm still so fascinated at that courage that you had in the beginning. Because I hear a lot of people always say, you know what? You have to bet on yourself. You have to know that you're gonna, you have to know it's gonna work out. They say that most of the successful people of our time, and even of times past, when they look at the Elon Musks and all these really, really successful people, the common thread in all of them is that they somehow had a fundamental belief that they were going to be successful. They didn't know how it was going to happen, but they knew it was going to happen. They knew that those great things are meant for them, and that everything that's happening around in their lives, whether good or bad, is all just part of the journey towards that bigger picture. Did you always have that type of belief about yourself as well?
Yes, always. Always.
Wow. Where do you think it comes from? Because if you can tell us where it comes from, we can go there and we can also go get it.
You know, I think it's an attitude thing, definitely. Because if you tell me it's not possible or you can't do it, I'm going to find a way to make it work and that it can work. I always say, you spell my name C-A-N-D, not C-A-N-T.
Oh! Now that's fire right there, guys. My goodness. And it's right. I mean, wow. That's pretty cool. You went and found in your name that hidden message. It's can.
That's this. It. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Can. You can even put can do this. Candice.
I like that. I'm gonna use that.
Excellent, Candice. We need to give Max a new name now. I mean, it's just fitting. He needs to find a hidden meaning in his name. Or everything he does to the maximum.
His name is spelled M-A-X-X. So he definitely does it to the maximum.
Not just one. Double. Excellent stuff, man. All right. And then now if we fast forward to today's life. It's busy. It's, you know, it's up and down. So many things are happening. You managed to build not only one, but I mean so many companies, you know. Tell us, okay, the first one. Let's go through how the first one started and all the internal conversations that were happening and how it all just came to life.
Okay, so the first one is Calorie Conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the largest health bakeries in the country. In terms of variation, we do banting, gluten-free, low-carb and wheat-free products.
Yeah.
And we supply retail stores all around the country. So that started with my brother 8 years ago. And it started as a meal company where we did the breakfast, lunch and suppers delivered to clients.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't like garlic. I don't eat onions. And, you know, it becomes difficult if you've got 350 clients.
Sure.
And then also with your eating times, in January, you have a huge amount of clients. Then they all go on holiday. And then April, you've got no clients. Then they all come back. They've picked up weight. Then you pick up clients. So it was like a up-down business. And then we decided, well, we're going to go the healthier route and go gluten-free. And my brother said, you know what? Let's rather look at the retail stores and start mass producing. And then we started baking bread and we knew nothing about baking bread. So our first lot of breads went out to a retailer and after 2 days it went green.
Oh.
Because we didn't realize that, you know, if it's not kept right, it can go green. You know what? 8 years later, we've come a long way.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. Just how do you get in... How do you go from an idea sitting? You guys are probably like sitting having lunch, and it's like, you know what would be really cool is if someone made like nice food and then started like, you know, you could just get your healthy food delivered to you. It starts off as a, you know, a random like idea like that. You know, it's one of those, you know what they should do, and you went and took the day to a, you know what we should do. Do you get me? Like a lot of the time we talk about other people making something happen. We would say, you know what they should do? They should make something like this. They. And you went and said, nope, not they, we. And then it went from just that to actually coming to life. You guys actually made a company come to life. These things are not necessarily easy. You just chatted through it like, oh well, we just started off like this, we just got 350 clients. Like you can just wake up and have 350 clients, you know. Even that was a journey. Let's talk about building the first version of the company, building that, and then having to acquire 350 clients. What do you rely on the most? Is it word of mouth? Just chat us through, because man, it's amazing. And sometimes you don't even appreciate how big your success is, because you know you gotten so used to what's happening right now, and you think you're thinking of where you still want to take it. But a lot of people are looking at you and they're like, "You are light years away, woman. How do I even get 10% of your success?" Yeah,
you're right. Like I said, it started as an idea and was a client, because I was busy measuring the client. So we would write, I still do that. That's another business. So I would measure you, do your body stat, and I would write you a diet. and tell you how to live a healthy lifestyle and so forth, and take you through the process of to changing your lifestyle. And while I was measuring my client, she said, why don't you start doing this for us? Why don't you cook us some meals? And if I think back, it was so unhygienic because we used to do it in little Tupperware containers.
Yeah.
You would eat, you would bring your stuff back to us.
We would wash it and put some more stuff in.
With boiling water and soap and sanitize it.
Yeah.
And then you go with your next lot.
Mm.
And, you know, as we progressed, things came more fancy. We had special packaging with sealing machines, but that was later on.
Mm.
And you asked about marketing. It was all word of mouth. Wow. We never, ever, ever did any marketing.
Wow. And with word of mouth, so you grow. You learn, you do a good job, another person speaks about you, you do a very good job again, someone says, hey, I need to refer you, these people are amazing. And they're like, hey, wat jy daai kos gekry? No, it's these guys, they make these delicious meals. I don't even have to think about it. They just get them here. Really cool. That's how you grew to 350.
That's it, yes.
Mm. So while everyone thinks that, you know, they need to break the bank trying to advertise and radio stations and this and that, sometimes when you're still in your infancy stage, don't spend too much money on things that might not get you the immediate return on investment. Try to, you know, focus on what you're good at and make sure that the people talk and they say only great things about you. That's a great lesson to learn from that. All right. And then we got to 350. We thought, man, we're doing so well. Let's go into bread. Now tell me about that journey. So obviously, you know, this is going so well. Why leave it now? You got so many people going. It could go from 300 to 3,500. You could have kitchens all over the country. Was there ever that mindset? And how did you decide, all right, no, it makes sense. Let's move into this direction now.
Well, at that stage, we had a little deli in Four Ways next to our gym. And we just added the bakery as an extra line to offer to the clients where they could come past and get healthy bread, because healthy bread wasn't available in those days.
Mm.
And we just realized that more people than, you know how it goes, everyone jumps on the bandwagon.
Yeah, this was around 8 years ago, you said, right?
Yeah.
Because 8 years ago, I think, as I could recall, not too long ago, there was this explosion of bread. All of a sudden, there was so many different options, like your major companies only started making many different varieties of healthy bread in the recent time. So you're right. So you guys managed to identify a trend early on, and then you guys decided that's the way.
Yeah, we like to say that we're trendsetters.
Great.
So, but at that stage, every person that we went to go and see said to us, you will never make it in this market because every gluten-free product tastes like cardboard. And I must admit, it used to.
Mm.
And no one will buy from you. So slowly, slowly, we were building on the bakery. And as we were building the bakery, a lot of people then started manufacturing ready-made meals. So then people started banting and paleo and vegan and vegetarian. So you lose a lot of the pie that you originally had.
Mm.
And then we said, right, we've got enough business on the bakery. Let's just focus on the bakery.
Wow. Okay. Then while you're doing this bakery thing and you're still in your first infancy stages of this new business now, and all of a sudden, you get hit with an unexpected turn of events, like the bread just went green and all the customers are coming back. You know, the people that you guys are supplying are calling you and saying, hey, something's wrong with your bread. Tell me about how you handle that conflict situation.
Well, we didn't do a recall. We obviously replaced everyone's bread. We went back to the drawing board. We replaced it the very following week and we were back in business.
Yeah. And then in terms of your brand name and, you know, let's say, for instance, there's always that damage that happens sometimes with, like, for instance, recently what happened with the Listeriosis, Dieting.
Dieting.
And all the polony was just rubbish and everybody threw out the polony, and there's some big brands that was seriously in the firing line because of it. And obviously that does something to it, and it hits quite hard on your brand, and yet you're saying that you guys managed to bounce back from that very, very swiftly. Was it, did you guys have to do anything in the public relations space, or was it just a matter of just replace the bread and everyone is happy again?
You know, I believe it's all about client relations. Mm-hmm. And luckily we had good client relations with everybody. Mm. And because we were promoting it ourselves, my brother and I, people would just phone us and say, look, this is what's happened, and we would replace it and then give them like an extra brownie and a biscuit. And,
nice.
You know, that always puts a little cherry on the cake at the end of the
great,
day.
Great, great.
So,
so the main thing there is when you still have a good relationship with the people that that you're providing your service to or your product to, and you make sure that when they complain, you know, you address it immediately. And also, you know, you show that, you know, your relationship with them is still very important, with a little extra, little rusk and a biscuit, or, you know, a little coffee or a cherry on top. They end up actually being able to, you know, to move along with you, understanding that, you know, you still are where you are. And I respect that you guys came back and you helped us with that particular crisis. Usually in business, I was in business at a young age, and one of the challenges we had was over-promising and under-delivering. It happened so easily. You didn't even see it coming. And then, boom! I'll give you one example. I had this friend of mine. So we were making water, right? Well, not really making the water, but bottling water. You remember? I mean, you can look at a couple of different companies today that sell bottled water. And a lot of them have popped up. When you look in the supermarkets, you see quite a lot of them. So we used to be one of them once upon a time while I was still in varsity, around first year, second year. And the cool thing is this, initially it wasn't really all that hectic, because, you know, we were handling small quantities and I was using my bursary money to fund this business. And it was cool, a great place to learn. And, you know, this is how we were going. And sometimes we'd brand people's bottles with, we'd brand the bottles with, let's say, your logo and that type of stuff, so that your company could have its own water. So initially we only had, you know, clients that would want 100 bottles or 200 bottles. We were like, wow, they want 200 bottles, you know. We were handling small quantities. And then one day, first let me just say, I was never the one that overpromised. It was always my partner, not my fault. And I was always trying to help him to understand. Well, always go in there with a level head. Don't make us sound bigger than we are. You know, just say what we can do and manage expectations. Always important. But sometimes you would get carried away in excitement, especially when it's a big client. You really want the client. You so badly want a bigger client because you want to grow. So here's what happened with us. I was in class and I got this call from my partner, and I'm thinking, eish, I'm in class, I can't answer it. So I wait a few minutes until the class finishes and I call him, and he says, hey, I need to talk to you. I'm right outside. Come, you know, I'm right here at the entrance of the campus. I come outside and we sit in the car. We had bought a little Bucky with the money that we had made. It was old Bucky, but hey, it got the bottled water around, you know. And he's sitting there and he's looking stressed. And I'm thinking, what's going on now? And I say, what's wrong? He said, I just come from a meeting with the Sundowns Football Club. And I'm thinking, hey, that sounds proper. I said, what's wrong? Oh, no, what happened at the meeting? He says, the meeting went well. They listened to what we have to offer and they want 80,000 bottles of water. I'm like, whoa! That's great. I'm thinking maybe they want that for the year, you know. I'm like, wow, that's great. And I say, when do they want it? Tomorrow. I'm like, what? How did it get there? How did you allow the conversation to get to a place? Because you know what happens with him? He says, yes, we can definitely make bottles of water. He says, yeah, can you do it for our club? And at what price? And he would mention the price. And they would be like, they're pretty reasonable. Hey, yeah, you guys are pretty cheap. That sounds great. All right, cool. You know, how good is your turnaround time? And then he would say, no, we really good. We fast. Like, I mean, just say how soon you want it, we'll get it done. I mean, we could even get it done tomorrow. You know, he really wanted this business so bad. And then, so he first said, we can get it done. We can even get it done tomorrow. Then they asked, all right, so you think you can do 80,000? He said, yeah. Oh, no. So now I'm thinking, where are we going to get the capital? Never mind the capital. Which supplier will help us with such a crazy turnaround time? This is impossible. And know what that makes? That makes an unsatisfied client. Because now your client saying, hey, we're still waiting for our bottles. Can we do Friday? Friday is still just like 2 days from now. They'll say, yes, Friday is still fine. You still know even that Friday is impossible because you've never done that before. Have you guys ever had challenges like that? Over-promising and under-delivering, or having to learn how to not overcommit, even though you see that the client's so big and you really want it. But you have to just learn how to control your excitement and control, you know, the relationship that you have with the client.
You can see I'm laughing. It's happened, oh, I don't know how many times. In the 8 years, I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
My brother would normally kick me under the table.
Oh,
then
good.
I know I must keep quiet.
Who's the overconfident one? Who's the one that gets excited? And who? So your brother's kicking you because he's saying, hey, hey, calm down. Well done, brother. What's your brother's name?
Clayton.
Well done, Clayton. You're doing a great job. Wow. And I think that's also really important that you and your partner have a good body language amongst each other when you are in those big meetings. You know, I normally suggest sitting next to your partner so that you can kind of like give him a signal without the client seeing that. Why are they kicking each other? Why are they tapping each other on the shoulder? You know, because it's important that you say, whoa, 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 let me speak now. You know, those are some of the secrets no one actually talks about. Saying, hey, guys, actually, when you get into these big meetings, you guys need to have a strategy. And you need to have signals, Morse code amongst each other. When I blink 2 times, I say yes. When I blink 3 times, I'm saying, don't answer them yet. Let's think about it. All those type of things. Because it can easily happen that you and your partner are not in the same mind. For instance, you and your brother. Your brother's thinking, near donkey, this near goeie idea. And you're thinking, oh, this is great. I can just see this happening. And then you overcommit on something. And now your company needs to deliver. And he's saying, why did you do that in the meeting? And you're saying, do what? It's like, you just said we can do 800,000. And oh my goodness. All right. So, you know, the occasional kick under the table and the, you know, the elbow.
The nudge.
The nudge.
Or the glasses. Now, he normally has his Oakley's on and he pulls it back and forth. And then I can see he's starting to stress. Then I know I must keep quiet.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Ooh. You see, these are the really cool Morse code type of things that you guys got going on that the clients don't know about. Because you can't let your clients see you sweat, right? You can't let them see you hesitate or get nervous or any of these things. You want to always maintain that cool, calm, composed look. But yet you know and your partner knows that, yeah, nah, this is actually not what we thought we were getting ourselves into. In fact, it makes me think of Bill Gates. I don't know if you know that Bill Gates and his partner, when they were still, you know, very young in their early 20s, and they had just they were still on this journey of making the personal computer. And as it started, when they were still developing Windows itself, they had, you know, they had their small little idea and they wanted to make it even bigger, and they had a little prototype, but nothing really concrete, nothing really magnificent that would make them billionaires or anything. And they, with their small little thing that they had made, which was really very, very basic, they met the industry leaders, which at the time was IBM or IMB, I'm hoping I'm saying it right. IBM, I think. Yes. And they were asked, you know, a series of questions, and they were presenting and everything. And IBM had a lot of computer t- type things. I can't really call them computers because of what we know as a computer today. But they had these processors that were in many different companies all over the world. IBM had that massive power in terms of how the world of computing works. And here comes these young boys and they say, no, we've got these ideas. And they say, all right, this sounds cool, gentlemen, but do you guys have an operating system? And they said, yeah, we got one, yeah. And they also did this type of stuff where they look at each other, nudge, nudge, kick each other under the table, and Bill Gates said, yes, we have one. And the other dude was like, I don't know why you just said that, because we don't. And they left that meeting looking at each other like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to go and make an operating system, like real quick, because these guys want an operating system. Because what ended up happening is they just got some young little dude who had a little operating system type of thing going. They bought it from him for a few mediocre dollars compared to what it is worth today. And that was the start of Windows. And I think back then there was MS-DOS and whatever they were calling it. But they signed the biggest deal in history with these type of nudge, nudge, kick each other on the table type of negotiations, where they didn't really have it. But you know what I mean? They just went in straight ahead and it worked. It really, really worked. So that's actually quite a cool thing and it's a nice thing that you're sharing that as well, because sometimes it's cool to know that the people who've made it also do the little kick each other the table things that we do as well when we're still trying to make it. Really cool. And then obviously the business started going well in terms of the bread. You guys started distributing nationally. Now that's a big thing. It's huge, and that couldn't have been easy. The capital, tell us about that type of thing. How do you acquire the capital to go bigger and bigger and bigger? Because I know that some of these bigger brands want you to, you know, maybe put something down so that they know that you have got some skin in the game. They know that you're really willing to do this, and should you not provide this week or this month, you know, you have something to lose as well. So that type of startup capital to go even bigger, how did that come about, and what were the challenges around that?
You know, that was quite hard. I mean, like the normal banks, you sit in front of them and they pull your details up on the screen and they say no immediately. So then you have to look at different channels. I always say, would you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? That's the saying I use, meaning that you do different things to make it work. So startup capital, yes, we've done some crazy things which we won't mention.
This is the perfect platform to talk about the hustle. Nobody here judges the hustle.
Oh my word. No, the hustle was real. And yeah, we hustle in hills.
Oh, that's cool.
So we hustle in hills.
Yeah.
But yes, I was lucky enough that my dad helped us with our first big growth spurt. And then we managed to go to a financial institution and they could assist us with forward invoicing. So basically it's called factor. They factor the invoice. They buy the invoice from you. And then that basically gives you capital. But you still have to run. You still have to run for 5 days or whatever just to get started. And that's hard. But luckily I have good staff and good suppliers, and they all knew what we were busy with and they were willing to help.
Now that's something interesting. You see, I always believe that sometimes we die because of a lack of knowledge. You talk about something called forward invoicing. Is that what that's the term?
Yes.
And if we don't know about these type of things or these options, then we fail to grow beyond a certain threshold because the banks don't want to hear it. We're too scared to approach these venture capitalists, or we don't even know where to find them.
They're land sharks.
You know, yeah, they feel like the sharks, you know, from Shark Tank. They're just going to take a bite of your, and then sometimes it feels dangerous to give away a portion of your company. But then there are these other options that you found out. I don't even know how you found out that there was an option like that. But these are the type of things that help that next entrepreneur who gets to that point, and then they just need that extra capital. But they wondering which are the smarter ways to go about it. So forward invoicing is one of them, and that's the one you used. And then there were other ways, like for instance, getting family involved. And you said that, you know, some banks could go partial financing, not necessarily giving you everything that you wanted. But these were just some of the ways in which you hustled, along with the hustling in heels that you won't disclose. Hopefully one day when you have nothing to lose, you'll come back and be like, oh yeah, by the way, I thought I'd tell you about that hustling in heels episode. Maybe one day we'll get that of you.
One day I'll share.
Great. And this is just one of the ways in which you managed to grow to the point where you could become a national distributor. One of the important things is getting a letter of intent important? Like for instance, let's say I could do this thing. Let's say Cliff Central wanted me to provide them with microphones, but I don't have the money for the microphones. Does a letter from Cliff Central saying, hey, if you can get us the microphones, we'll pay for them, and me coming to you with that letter and saying, hey, I need funding, look, they say they're gonna pay, I just need the money, but if we can get these things, I can get them, then I can pay you as well. Did you use any methods like that to try and get by, and are they at all effective?
Yeah, most definitely. We used, it's called an SLA, a service level agreement. So you have to provide those, because they must actually see, is it a blue chip company that you're dealing with? And who are you supplying? What type of quantities are you going to supply? How long is the contract valid for? Because it doesn't help that the contract's valid for a month and they're giving you all this finance, and what happens after a month?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely.
Well, you heard it right there from the lady herself. All of the secrets to success, the secrets to the hustle, hustling in heels, pushing 5 different companies, being a mom to Max and all the others as well. A sister, of course, as well. And the nice thing is that family is doing business together and they're growing together. And that's a really great thing. Now, we got about a few minutes to go, like 3 to 5 minutes. And I just want you now to just have center stage. Just share with us. You can share with us about, where to find you, about a little about your companies. How do we keep in touch with you? And some words of wisdom as well to the up and coming hustlers, the ladies rocking in heels who also want to be, you know, the corporate mavericks and great mothers as well.
Well, I like Richard Branson, and he always says, never say no, you can figure it out later. So that's my motto in life. If you're going to ask me for a bread that doesn't have eggs and no sugar and no yeast, I'm going to say yes, and I will write a recipe for it, and I will make it work. So that's how I live my life. You can follow us on www.calorieconscious.co.za. You can follow me on Instagram, which is Candace_Robertson. I was also one of the Tammy Taylor Mrs. South Africa finalists last year, and I won SABC 3 Viewer's Choice and Mrs. Charity. So I'm also an ambassador for cancer.
Excellent.
For women empowerment. So I've got so much going on in my life.
It's amazing, guys. This is just proving that you don't necessarily have to be one-dimensional. You could, you know, you could be amazing in terms of your business. You can be amazing in terms of leading where you feel, you know, you strongly want to contribute. And for you, it was the Cancer Association and contributing there, and also getting to be in, you know, into the beauty industry as well, in the way in which, you know, you found that you had a natural talent for it. How about you go and you tap into that, into Mrs. South Africa, and see where and how far that could take you. And it's all just come around full circle, and now you got this amazing product, which is your brand, which is absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for all your great gems of inspiration, knowledge, and education as well. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and never give up.
great. You heard it from the lady herself. That is it, ladies and gentlemen. It's the shortest hour of the week, every single time, just like that. And we wrap up right now in that particular way. You can catch us again every single Thursday live on cliffcentral.com. Other than that, of course, you can always get the podcast and just rewind, fast forward, and you can rewind back to some of the great things Candace has said. It's Candace, ladies and gentlemen. She's the one, she's the only, and she's the lady with all the power. Awesome stuff, awesome stuff. 3, 2, 1, and we out of here.
This is CliffCentral.com.